All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Peter Angud from NQF. Thank you all for finding some time to join us today on this second conference call for the Patient Safety Advisory Committee. You've had some materials forwarded to you by Eric, and hopefully you've had a chance to have a look at those. We'll review those today, and then hopefully that will precipitate some further discussion as we've been building the awareness for each of you on NQF's patient safety programs and what are we doing, where do we need to go, and what more can we do. Since our last call, there's been a fair amount of ongoing activity, and we'll update you on all of those different programs in a few minutes. But I wanted to thank each of you for participating in that survey and helping us to refine the survey so that we can get some information. And Eric has, I think, done a great job of shepherding us around in order to make sure everyone participates, as well as getting the information put into a format that we can understand. One of with the state of Massachusetts election going the way it did last week, it's generated a lot of uncertainty and perhaps an overabundance of speculation on healthcare reform and its processes. And I only bring that up to reassure everyone that it really does not affect what we're up to with our patient safety programs at NQF. And so our discussions and our activities and our suggestions for future strategies, I think, are all still very relevant and appropriate for what we're up to. If anything, we continue to anticipate and expect that as reform legislation comes to reality, there will be some quality improvements and patient safety initiatives within there that will create some activities for NQF. So it's still a very important time for NQF to be positioning itself in terms of its role within American healthcare as it relates to patient safety. So please continue to feel that what we're trying to accomplish with this group is of some value moving forward. The first item is to review and discuss further the results of the survey that you did participate in, and then we will provide you some updates on the different projects, and then close out the meeting with some further discussion on how to move forward with this committee. Remembering that the committee was initially formed up as a time-limited committee for about a 15 to 18-month period, primarily to look at the NQF safety agenda and to provide us that input. So we look forward to the ongoing discussion. If we need to have further activities beyond this current calendar year, then we can certainly plan for it. However, if we've wrapped up our activities on a fairly brisk timeline, then we can do that and get you freed up for other volunteer work, either within your own organizations or with us or other professional societies that you see appropriate and fit. So those are really just my background comments. I will get us to just jump right in to the survey results, and hopefully this will provide us some fodder for discussion and commentary on not only the different programs, but where you all think we're headed as far as a patient safety-oriented organization. So, Eric, you've done an awful lot of work prepping up this survey and collating the results. Why don't you just give us a brief review of how you set the survey up, what you got, and take us through some of the results as you've laid them up for us, and then we can get the discussion going.
Sure. Thank you, Peter. Operator, before I continue, can I just ask, is there anyone on the participant line currently?
This is Rita Shane.
This is Helen Haskell. I had some trouble getting on, but I'm on now.
Terrific. Just trying to get an idea. An operator?
Yes. There's no participant, listen-only participants. It's
very good.
In yet.
Thank you.
And Eric, this is Helen Burston. I'm on as well.
Hey, Helen. So doing just a brief overview of the survey, and I hope to actually not talk too much and really engage folks and get your thoughts and your questions on the survey and your opinions, which is really what we've been looking for all along, and we really appreciate you taking the time to fill out this survey. Hope it informed you about some of NQF's programs, and as well, certainly, it guided our efforts and informed our thoughts as we go forward. As you know, you were asked four questions about perceptions about the NQF programs, opportunities for harmonization, and then patient safety programs to develop. So just looking at the first question on perceptions of NQF patient safety programs, and if you have, I will certainly do a play-by-play, but if you have the GoToMeeting open at the moment, we have the first chart coming up here. And I think among the things that interested me here, the safe practices widely used in the field were a clear number one. And again, remember, looking at these numbers, lower is the best perceived benefit. So we're looking at the lower ones are better, and the higher numbers are those that have the least perceived benefit to U.S. healthcare. So the safe practices, a clear number one with an average of just over two. Interesting for me, as someone who's only been at NQF a year, the serious reportable events, one of our better known projects, the average was closer to a four. So that one was a little bit of a surprise to me, but as well understandable in some ways because of the, as we've heard from the field, the low frequency that some of these events occur. NPP, patient safety, a program that is still getting off the ground but doing some substantial work out in the field. Interesting for me that the mode there was one. So obviously a lot of folks have strong opinions of this program, but in the same regard, the highest standard deviation. So there is definitely a range of thoughts about this program. And then looking at the state-based reporting agencies, one of the newer programs that I've been working to help get off the ground, that one had the highest average, which in my mind is understandable, as really we haven't developed the project page for that yet and are just starting on some of the work to try to connect with the states and explain the values of our programs and as well explain about the serious reportable events. The common formats, as you can see to the far left side, that one, the average there fell right in the middle. So that one worth noting as well, a mode, higher mode there of six, worth noting as that one certainly used by the field, but as well early on in the process. So any questions about this first chart about the perceptions of NQF patient safety programs?
Thanks, Eric. That's it's Peter. I find one, I'm not surprised that the safe practices have as much popularity or perceived value that they come up as much as they do. It would be interesting to know if with the NPP patient safety priority, whether people wound up focusing more on NPP as an initiative overall as opposed to the patient safety priority of NPP. And then with the performance measures and the serious reportable events filling out the next couple of rankings there. So our primary programs, the big four as I call them, safe practices, NPP, measures, and serious reportable events, shook out a little bit differently for me than what I thought they would, but I'm particularly interested in people's response around the NPP for the time being, at least to get our discussion started. Sam, why don't, if you could, form up a thought on the fly there to help get us going.
Sorry. Pardon me, I'm working my way through a cold here. I guess when I worked through the survey, I was thinking about it from the standpoint of two levels, one, patient safety practitioner, and two, what would be most useful as I'm thinking about this from a non-clinical standpoint. And you know, I think the patient safety measures tend to strike me, as well as the safe practices, because I think the clear-cut nature, and I think that's been one of the challenges that we've discussed, is, sometimes things are a bit fuzzy, and those seem to be something that people can grab hold of. Common formats are, you know, far less specific for far less value except for a specific activity around the PSO work. While long term it may have value, but right now it doesn't resonate with most more in that world. It's just my thoughts.
Well, that helps. That helps. I like that distinction between, you know, less precise versus fairly precise types of programs. Anybody want to react to Sam's comment or provide their own?
Yes.
Can't quite hear. Was somebody trying to get on a comment?
Very much.
Uh-huh. This is a small comment. Well, so this is Rita Shane. I thought the because the NPP patient safety proposed measures that have just been initiated were explicit and could be, I guess that's why it's called National Priorities Partnership, were defined. The direction there is clear, and it seemed like it was a way to really focus.
Okay.
So that those ratings are consistent with my ratings.
Okay, terrific. How about Helen Haskell or Dan Ford from the consumer's perspective? How would you guys, in terms of your own opinions or thoughts of these, the way others view these, is this consistent with what you think consumers are looking for or in terms of importance?
Go ahead, Helen, if you want.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I mean, it's consistent with the way I voted. Yeah, I think in general that, you know, people do want things that are, you know, fairly specific and, you know, practical. So, I assume that I'm representative of the consumer on this, and you know, it's a level at which most consumers don't operate. I don't know what Dan. What do you think?
My strongest understanding of what NQF is doing is the safe practices, and that's
yes.
Because I've been involved personally with some development through the TMIT activities. And so that's much clearer to me. Eric, after you put out that second message of a plea for help in completing the survey, that was much clearer to me, and echoing Sam's comment about, you know, as precise as you can be and less fuzzy you can be, the better. For we consumers, a lot of this is going to be fuzzy anyway. And so we're trying to get our arms around terminology, a lot of things, so we can be as constructive a help as possible. So it's a long way of saying I'm in agreement with particularly the top four.
Yeah, and that's something I hear not only from the about NQF patient safety, and I understand what you're saying, but as well, there's certainly a need in the field for outcomes and less fuzzy measures of what is improvement in patient safety. So definitely concur with that thought.
Well, and that's certainly true. I mean, patients are really only interested in outcomes. And I think that's something people need to keep in mind.
We've tried every procedure known to
us. Yeah, no, I think that's an important point, Helen, that we need to keep hearing. And some of these programs that we listed for you are, while they may be coming known to the folks on the committee, they're certainly not as well known outside of this committee structure at this point. The common formats and the whole PSO initiative is not well penetrated in healthcare yet. The reporting framework, we're just doing that report, but it certainly represents a strong set of information that will be of value for healthcare, but it's not a known entity as yet. And similarly, the state-based reporting is just activity that's getting coalesced. Each individual state's been doing their own thing, but it hasn't been coordinated, and there's further work being done in that regard. So it doesn't surprise me that those three wind up kind of coming in at the bottom of the list, if you will. It does surprise me a little bit that the serious reportable events get ranked in the middle there. They've been out pretty long now, and they've been pretty stable, and they're fairly specific in terms of the items, and maybe you guys can provide us some comment as why you didn't rank it up as high as you might have. Maybe it is related to a lack of specificity or actionable activity on them.
It would have to be typed across.
It's just a list as opposed to something specific to do, but I'd be interested in your comments.
This is Sam. Just a couple of thoughts. One, there is a little bit of ambiguity in some of them in terms of the range of what's serious, and you know, it would probably help if they're a little bit more declarative at some level. But the other thing is, I think you mentioned actually, Peter, just the rarity of those events. They are more of, this sounds a bit crass, but interesting information bits versus actually actionable.
Right.
And so I think from my perspective, certainly you want to avoid those, but there are other things like the safe practices that when applied should help keep us from getting there.
Just to add to that, I remember during our meeting that we had last fall, one of the things that we focused on was where's the most harm, and let's prioritize patient safety efforts at where harm exists that we can take some action to prevent. And I guess that's when I rated it. I felt guilty rating it not as high because, you know, nobody wants a serious reportable event. But on the other hand, I also feel we need to prioritize on where is the most harm, and let's make sure that just like Joint Commission has their national patient safety goals, although one would argue about the evidence supporting every one of those, but to do this in a way that's thoughtful, one would hope that if there was going to be a list of serious reportable events, it should be those that are deemed to cause them have the potential to cause significant harm, and prioritize the ones based on the evidence where we can work towards trying to prevent them.
That's very well stated. Thank you. I think, you know, from the first face-to-face meeting and these discussions, we're getting that message very clear, and it's coming through our different committee discussions as well. We've recently had the Steering Committee for Serious Reportable Events, and there was some discussion at that. Additionally, this steering committee that's focused on the framework on public reporting came to that focus area as well. And so as we move forward in our programs, this whole idea of focusing, specificity, actionable, and going where the harm is happening is loud and clear, that's for sure.
I really agree with that, because the serious reportable events, they stand out. But these other issues that we could put into, you know, safe practices going ahead and prevent a lot of this other, some of these other safety issues, I think we find some other harmful areas that could be prevented. That's even where with some of the measures, I think of the consumers with some of the measures, even in long-term care, they may be prevalence rates, but not actually an indicator of poor practice. And the pressure ulcers is an example of that. It could be poor practice, but it could just be that we've got a high wound care program going on, and it may make the consumer think it's a poor functioning area, when in fact they may be one of the best wound care programs.
Right, right.
Peter, this is Bob Bunting. A couple of things that I see on the graph. Some of this will be duplicative of what's already been discussed. But, you know, obviously safe practices is the lowest score. The state-based is the highest. And then I see two different groups, the common formats and reporting format. I'm not sure there's any statistically significant difference between those two.
No.
Then you have the three lumped together, the SREs, the patient safety, and the PSM. When I did this, I struggled quite a bit because of the different hats and backgrounds that I have. You know, right now I work for WellPoint. I'm doing research, and I'm also a former risk manager, a hospital risk manager. So out of deference to them, I think I'm always thinking about what burdens are we putting on the hospitals. And that's one of the concerns that I have. I mean, here at WellPoint, we're getting asked all the time, what are we doing to force the issue and make the environment safer? And honestly, the force that we can exert is limited. We're looking at CMS and some other agencies to exert force, and we'll champion that and, you know, get that into our contracts as quickly as possible. But you also want to be wary of forcing the hospitals to do too much reporting. For example, with SREs, you know, who do they have to answer to? Is it CMS with their hacks and never events? Is it us with the SREs? Is it Joint Commission and Sentinel Events? And then us being WellPoint and insurer, do we come out with yet another list with another enforcement rule? And then what does United and Aetna and all the others do? So it almost becomes a regulated nightmare for the hospital. So I would like to see less duplication and more encouragement. One of the things that I have found in my reading is we don't really do a good job of showing hospitals how to do this. One of the things that we see is, yes, it works at Johns Hopkins or at Cleveland Clinic, but what does that do for me? The hospitals are having a hard time making the recommendations actionable within their constraints.
I think those are all excellent comments, Bob, and this theme of burden and duplicity is very much clear there. On your last point, I'm involved with the National Patient Safety Foundation's board as well as on this year's program planning committee. And in preparation for that program, we sent some feedback requests to last year's attendees, and this demand, and I can use the word demand, for learning how to do the measurement and what it all means was very, very high. And we're going to put in a workshop in advance of the main meeting just to address that particular issue, because a lot of folks are feeling this pressure but not really quite understanding it nor how to implement. So I think that's an important piece of as we construct these different programs and revise them, we have to keep that in the back of our mind. And that will come up further when we talk about harmonizing agencies. That's why we asked that question in part.
This is John Hickner. I wanted to make a comment. It was more of a revelation, I think, last week when I finally figured this all out. I'm scratching my head thinking, why am I not really understanding these programs all that well? And the more I thought about it, the more I thought that these six, seven different programs can be grouped into three categories, and then they start making a lot of sense to me. And here are the three categories for which I've used questions. The first category is, what are the important safety issues? And the programs that are included under that question are serious reportable events, NPP patient safety, and patient safety measures. The next question is, how do we measure and report them? And that includes common formats, reporting framework, and state-based reporting agencies. And the third issue is, the third question, how do we improve patient safety? And there's only one category, that is safe practices. And once I regroup them in this way, then I say, okay, I can begin to understand how these programs might fit together when I sort them into those three categories.
I love it. Congratulations. Applaud.
That makes total sense. Yeah, this is Jane Barnsteiner. I've been on for a while, but I was late getting on the call. That is really, I think, an excellent operationalization of all of these programs and probably addresses why safe practices came in where it came in.
Right.
Murphy, I'm on the call now as well. I came in a little late, but I've been listening for a while and couldn't agree more with many of the comments that have been made. I found it very confusing and wasn't totally sure, even after reading the information, that I understood a lot of the
real differences, but I think the way it's just been grouped into those three areas, what are the issues, how do we measure them, and how do we improve them?
This is Rita.
A way to put it.
This is Rita. One other thought I had when I was doing the survey, and I'm wondering on a go-forward basis if we're going to continue to provide input across these different programs, would be some sort of a crosswalk, maybe using the groupings that were just mentioned that provided the overarching purpose and goal so we could see it across, at least for the, if we broke them down the way they were that was just mentioned. So if we looked at the SREs, NPP patient safety measures and safe practices, and looked across what the purposes were and whether what the differences are without going through every single component, it would be easier to provide feedback on a go-forward basis on those on the different programs.
Thanks, Rita. And for the group, we actually are in the processes of trying to weave as a minimum the SREs and the practices and the measures together better.
Good.
And make sure there's an underpinning through the NPP priorities. And we've got that plan and that transition partway done, and as we get it into a bit more of a more formalized draft, we do intend to utilize you guys to help us with that. And the way John just characterized things, I think part of what we need to look at is, in addition to the three programs that I just mentioned, how do we look at these other programs as well as any future programs, and how do they fit? Where's our priorities as an organization, et cetera? So other comments from John's groupings?
This is Arjun Sharma. I agree with that as well. As a practitioner, I was most familiar with the SREs. But I was always struck with them not being particularly healthcare related. There were more security, engineering, a lot of other things. And so it's actually really nice to see that the safe practices came in where they did, because they really do pertain to healthcare itself.
Thanks, Arjun. Good comment.
This is Helen. I think the value of the SREs, you know, to my mind, as a consumer, or two consumers, has been that they have a catchy name, Never Events. People understand that, they remember it. And the idea that there are things that should never happen, and that the medical profession agrees should never happen, demystifies them. It introduces the concept of error, even if at a very high level. It is a very rarely occurring level. I think just in terms of awareness, they're really good. But I think that the problem, again, has been their relationship. You know, what happens when people do report a never event? And does anything come of it?
Right. And just want to remind everybody that, you know, we have this Serious Reportable Events Steering Committee, and that committee has recently made some proposed revisions to the definition of a serious reportable event. And while the term never event comes up quite often in conjunction with the SREs, it's not a term that we actually promulgate. And so actually one of the proposed revisions to the definition is to use the word not instead of never. These are serious events that should not occur. That revision to the definition is up on the website for public comment. It's in its public comment period right now, and that closes February 3rd, I believe. And it is generating a reasonable amount of discussion, both for and against making these kinds of changes. And a lot of it focuses right around the comments that Helen just made, and that is that to some degree never is a galvanizing term. However, it also has negative connotations, and where's the benefits versus the negatives on this, and how do we improve reporting by perhaps modifying the definition? So if you haven't had a chance yet, I would encourage you to go to the NQF website and put in your comments for the public comment on that revised definition.
This is Phil Mailer from Denver Health. As a clinician and as chief medical officer here of this large safety net in Denver, just to follow up on that discussion about never events, I mean, I think that there's mushrooming sort of power base to challenge these never events, because I would actually take exception and say that never events are not never events. These things do happen despite the best medical care provided. Sometimes adequate DVT prophylaxis, people have clots on them despite perfect anticoagulation and despite perfect prophylaxis. And so surgical wound infections do happen. Catheter-related UTIs do happen, with more and more evidence saying that tight diabetic control is probably dangerous in the older population. You're going to see an occasional patient who's in the hospital who's going to develop hyperosmolar or other evidence of diabetic lack of control. It seems to me that the evidence supporting the safe practices is much more robust, and as the previous speakers have said, it seems to me that that's where it's at, and I think that we really need to reconsider this whole terminology of never events, because in the public's eyes, they shouldn't happen, they never should happen, and if they happen, you're a bad hospital or a bad provider. And I think that that really can beget actually adverse actions on the part of providers, that really focusing on those things even more, when sometimes they're just out of the provider's control and they're going to happen, whereas things such as readmissions or failure to rescue, where clearly a person shouldn't languish on the floor for 6 hours with their vitals becoming unstable without getting an intervention, sort of the basis of the rapid response systems, those are clearly evidence-based. But I worry that we put too much emphasis on this term never, and it could have adverse effects on the deliverance of health care.
Very good comments, and comments I've heard before as well. So I expect the commentary on this revision to the definition is going to be robust, and I encourage each of you to participate in that.
You know, this Dan Ford, Peter, it occurs to me that, and that's a very good analysis of this. It just seems to me all of this is a reason why we don't get good reporting on serious, whatever we call them, events. And it's really crucial to have a good understanding of what is meant. So the whole purpose of this data collection system is improvement.
Right.
If we don't have the right data, we don't get improvement.
Correct, Dan. Thank you. Thank you.
The other thing, I think, just to add to that, I mean, I'm trying to think of, okay, so once in any organization something is identified that is is truly a breakdown of systems, let's say we're just focusing on the ones that are the most likely to cause harm. The other thing that doesn't really exist, to my knowledge, is some sort of peer-to-peer dialogue, kind of an M&M, that could occur where organizations could collaborate on how they've overcome or reduce the prevalence of harmful errors within their organization. I mean, it does occur through informal professional networking, but the whole notion of how could one use expertise from other organizations through a safety network would be a way to deal with organizations that might be having more problems with one particular event causing harm than another.
Helen, Chuck Denham here. The safe practice number one is does tie into the patient safety organization's concept, and we've continued to refine it even with the 2010 update, and there is a good hard wiring there. Again, voluntary and not mandatory in too many places, but it is there, and there's some good there's a good framework.
Thanks, Chuck. Yep, good comment. All right, other comments on this ranking of the perceived benefit? We've had some great messaging all the way through, focusing, specificity, actionable, go where the most harm is occurring, the groupings that John put out there, what are the issues, how do we measure and report, and how do we improve? For all of the programs, we need to look at how to interrelate them better and then to try to support as best possible with evidence, obviously. And the SREs deserve a little bit more focused discussion, and that's already beginning to occur. So any other last comments before we go to the next stage of this? All right. Hearing none, Eric, do you want to take us to the next question and the outputs from that information?
Sure. We'll just move on from here to the next slide about programs that NQF should harmonize with, and organizations, excuse me, that NQF should harmonize its patient safety programs with. And in this question, we listed a number of audiences for our patient safety programs and asked you to select whether you felt NQF should harmonize with it. And a lot of strong responses here. Some of our partners that we're already doing some significant work with, such as ARC and CMS, certainly rated high here. An interesting one from that I saw was the PSOs, which, as you, Peter, mentioned in response to the last question, may not have penetrated the field all that well, yet it's something that NQF has been working with in our reporting framework, which may affect the PSOs, certainly with the common formats, and then as well with the data that is emanating from the serious reportable events. A lot of that will be going to PSOs, yet a 31% PSAC support rating there, again, maybe indicates that the PSOs just getting off the ground and not all that much awareness out there. Outside of that, some of the broader policymaking groups did not rate as high. Policymakers and kind of public intellectuals among the lowest at 19%. Congress, 31%. And again, another policymaking group of state government agencies at 38%. But we did see stronger support for some of the groups that are more well-recognized in the industry, such as IHI and ISMP. So.
Thanks, Eric. Reactions from folks. Big preferences for Joint Commission, ARC, and CMS, and then a little clustering of ISMP, IHI, and other components of DHHS. And then a variety overall with policy and the ECRI Institute being lowest on the rung. But general reactions and other ideas.
This is Denise Murphy. One of the things that I truly understand as a government organization that we are, our charge is more strategic than it is sort of getting down into the details or being operational. But I feel like I make the statement a lot and about sort of the voice of the front line, and that's probably lumped in other, but it's interesting to me that that we would look at, for example, the National Patient Safety Foundation. That makes sense. They're of course a partner, but when you look at the issues in patient safety, medication safety, infection prevention, you know, there's not I'm surprised that there's not more interest, and certainly the ISMP is here, but SHE and APIC and IDSA and people who really on a day-to-day basis manage infection prevention do not, you know, it's not something that at least the group is feeling like we need to spend more time harmonizing with. And I think in someone's earlier discussion about the concern about making, it sort of calls to mind the blunt end, sharp end model to me often, where we have to be careful that we're not sitting way up at the blunt end and not not having our due diligence around what the sharp end is really able to do. Not that we make policy or recommendations based on whether people feel they can do it or not, but I think understanding the reality of, you know, if this book of work was not negotiable, how would we listen to you in terms of the way it's going to be operationalized? Because we do tend to, when you look at, you know, just reporting, public reporting, there's not total standardization of that, and we're not looking at, are the things we're reporting giving us the best information, and are we certain that everyone is, you know, collecting it the same way and able to collect it the same way? So I just want to be sure that we're not falling into that trap of being so blunt end that we're forgetting what's what the reality is and the importance of that.
Yeah, that's a very good comment, Denise, and a reality check that we need to keep coming back to. And yet, you know, with the first decade of existence for NQF being heavily focused on endorsement of measures, that's kind of by inherent nature a fairly blunt-end bit of work, although trying to get it so that it's understandable and implementable at that so-called sharp end. But other reactions to Denise's comment or fresh and different comments?
Dan Ford here, Peter. When I responded, I did it from the context that I assume harmonization has at least some degree of cooperation or negotiation built into it, constructive negotiation, versus one-way communications, and which has a role. But with the harmonization, I think, has to have the cooperation negotiation built into it. So that's why I responded. And, you know, with some of these, you can figure out that it's just simply one way, and you won't get it both ways.
Right.
Jane Barnsteiner, and I'd like to respond to both Denise and the last speaker. I responded the exact same way in terms of the where NQF would cooperate. And from the front-line, sharp-end kinds of perspective, the health physicians and nurses particularly are really laboring under quality fatigue these days, and in terms of all the information that's coming at them, organizations not always clear about what are the best ways to implement the best safety practices, and then the reporting requirements are just positively overwhelming. And so NQF working cooperatively with organizations like the Joint Commission and CMS to work towards common reporting formats and the like, I think, would be a tremendous service. And also help to streamline the effort that is put forth so we can spend more time on actually putting practices in place and improving the system.
Thanks, Jane. Good comments.
Peter, this is Bob. I think Denise is the one who mentioned APIC, and one of the things that I've seen in my research is that you do have all these authoritative bodies coming out with what we should be doing, but you also, and this is not to pick on any particular organization, but ARC and IHI are guilty of this to some degree, and that is they will publish a success at a specific hospital, and when you look at that success is not very well validated statistically, there was not adequate pretest, post-test evaluation, or it was not done with academic rigor, it almost becomes anecdotal. So when you start looking at it from a hospital's perspective, one of their arguments is going to be, number one, I don't have time to read everything that comes out, and number two, what do I believe out of all these sources? So the validity and reliability of all these different studies and whether they're anecdotal or presented as scientific evidence varies tremendously, and I think we're putting a big burden on the readers to try to figure out what they need to be doing. I don't think we're fostering that adoption process nearly enough.
Okay, thanks, Bob. And certainly the preponderance of storytelling, while it has its clear value in terms of generating emotion and helping provide anecdotal stories, sometimes creates a little further muddiness in the science behind these things as well. Although I value storytelling for its own purposes, don't get me wrong. Other comments.
This is Sam. When I looked at that part of the survey, I guess the thing that struck me is where are the biggest leverage points? And, you know, I think the ones that we saw come out at the top are probably most likely those leverage points by and large. I mean, the resources, as, you know, has been talked about, the hospital are limited. I think resources in general are limited. So, you know, harmonizing with those that are most likely to create a groundswell in a specific direction seem to make the most sense.
Good. Other comments? Arjun, how about you on this one from your unique perspective? And you perhaps look at harmonization and partnering a little bit differently than others?
No, actually, ARC, Joint Commission, and CMS were the three that I thought were most relevant, and part of it was in terms of driving, because CMS on the reimbursement side, that tends to drive it, Joint Commission in terms of accreditation, ARC in terms of research. The other rather peculiar sort of, and may not be shared by many other people, but I, as a practitioner, I just had the sense that many of the actions of the Joint Commission were actually counterproductive in terms of patient safety, because there is always, for example, to take one example, the privacy issue is in conflict in the hospital with the safety issue. For example, if you remove names from a lot of locations, it becomes more difficult to, for example, figure out who everybody is under certain circumstances. So I thought that, you know, bringing the two together so that the Joint Commission can look at some of the impacts in terms of what one is looking at in terms of safety would really help a lot.
Good, good. Thank you for saying that. All right, some other comments, or should we move on to our next segment? Anyone else want to react or offer other opinions?
I guess this is Rita. My comment was it's not only which organization should NQF harmonize with, but wouldn't it be nice if NQF could create harmony across the top three organizations to create a prioritization and what we would all agree would be the priorities for safety, because I would agree with all the comments that have preceded mine in terms of too many measures and measures that don't always make sense, but because they're Joint Commission, one has to do them regardless.
Right. Well, and one of the things that NQF is getting better at is being a neutral convener.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that with our interactions between the state-based reporting agencies and the different federal agencies, including CMS and CDC and ARC and a few others in there, they recognize that there isn't a connection or even a pathway of sorts between the federal agencies and the state-based agencies. And so NQF's winding up being the convener of trying to open up that federal-state flow of information and harmonizing of their initiatives just around reporting. A lot of that's focused on the HAI action plans, for instance. So your challenge, if you will, well, what is it that NQF can do to help precipitate some of this harmonization and the interplays between research, payment, and accreditation and measurement? Measurement being what we do, mm-hmm, is a big, big part of that.
Well, wasn't a comment that was made at our meeting in October about there is no national safety agenda?
Yeah.
and you would think that here we are 11 years after the IOM report, and where there's still no national agenda, there's lots of agendas,
yeah,
or agendi, but not an agenda.
Well, maybe that's what we need to do with this committee as we move forward.
Yes, Peter, I want to echo the suggestion about being a convener. I think that's one of the most valuable functions that NQF could, mm-hmm, serve in this whole arena.
I agree. Well,
yeah, thanks, John. And we're happy to do that. And part of the difficulty is the financing, obviously, for doing those sorts of things. But
sure,
we do view that as an important role for ourselves. And Janet Corrigan, as CEO, is promoting that more and more as we move forward, at least in my discussions. And this challenge within that of developing the national safety agenda, at some degree, we'll begin to get through that with the National Priorities Partnership, but there's a lot of pressure on that set of priorities to get some activity going in order to put some material goods behind the rhetoric, if you will.
Peter, this is Phil Mailer in Denver again. When Janet Corrigan was out at Denver Health a few months ago, we had a long discussion about perhaps NQF trying to put the brakes on CMS or trying to open a dialogue about the planned marked expansion of the core measures. You know, as you know, we started out with 10 and then it went to 21 and 27, and there are rumors that it could go to over 100 core measures in the next year to year and a half, and just the cost to healthcare institutions to pull these core measures, even if you have an automatic system, and then the issue that many of the core measures, as we spoke about at the top of the hour, for instance, the pneumonia core measures, there's been a lot written that most of them are not evidence-based, and in fact, the one about giving antibiotics within 4 hours of coming to an emergency room has probably, again, caused adverse events and that we're over-prescribing antibiotics when they're not indicated. Is there any ability to open that dialogue to say that we have enough sort of safety potential agenda out there and to simply increase the number of core measures that hospitals need to report where it's not clear what benefit accrues as a result thereof? Is there any ability to move that forward at this time and try to put a, quote, moratorium on the number of core measures that we're currently facing?
We do have a fairly extensive measures maintenance process beginning as a result of our HHS contract work. Helen Burstyn,
yeah.
Are you still on? Do you want to make some comments and react?
We would definitely like to respond to that. Thanks, Phil. I agree with you completely. The last thing you want to do is continue to just pile on. I think what we want to make sure is that that core set of measures is, in fact, the right set of measures. So you may not know, for example, that recently those three smoking cessation measures that were part of that core set that had essentially become checkboxes in most hospitals were not reendorsed by NQF when they went through maintenance.
Yeah, we heard that, which is good.
Yeah, I think so, too. So I think the idea is we're trying to be thoughtful about what are the right measures that should be put forward, retire the ones that have become checkboxes and, you know, dump and just, you know, work for the sake of work without any benefit to patients, and think thoughtfully about what could be done automated. The point you made, it's still not free to do things automated, but at the same time, you know, the number of measures requiring chart review to do something that is not evidence-based is not helpful either. So we're very involved with the HQA work group for the HQA, the Hospital Quality Alliance. So, you know, the public hospitals do have a seat at the table there, by the way, Phil, so probably be something important to get to the NAPH folks as well to bring that perspective to the table.
Thanks, Phil.
Sure.
All right, you guys, other comments on this one? All right, hearing none. Eric, do you want to present up the last slide? This is more to do with, in addition to what all we've talked about, what other things can we do, new activities?
Yeah, and I'll be brief here as we are getting a little bit short on time. Seems like there was a wide range of perspectives, understandably so. Understanding how the measures are being better used in the field is something that we've been working on under the HHS contract and some of our environmental scan work, and recognizing how the field as well, as indicated from the survey, perceives our measures is something that's important to us in our as well our patient safety portfolio. And then other comments and suggestions focus on impacts, and again, tied to our first discussion on outcomes, is something of considerable importance, and as well, focusing our efforts is something that we always are looking at and trying to recognize is a priority and how to do best, similar to what we're trying to do with the measure maintenance at NQF. So an understandable range, but I think some good suggestions in these last two questions.
Alrighty, thanks, Eric. And anyone want to provide further comments or reactions?
One more comment, just because we're implementing a clinical information system here.
Mm-hmm.
The I don't know if it's actually specified anywhere other than a known fact that any sort of technology or automation that's implemented, whether it's a clinical information system or a device in the OR, has unintended consequences. And I don't know where that fits. I'd have to go back and look through all the programs we talked about at the beginning of this conference. But the whole notion of, I think we're embarking upon a new era of safety. I was at a AHA meeting where the CEO of Lifespan talked about how technologically advanced they were, and while they were all looking at monitors, the baby turned blue and died. So they were too busy looking at another part of the clinical information system, obviously not looking at some of the key vitals and such. But I guess I think we're embarking as we become electronic and wired in a new world of safety, and I don't know where that fits.
I don't think it has not been put into any of the programs, except perhaps in the safe practices where we address some of that as it relates to the CPOE.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the process of doing some background environmental assessment work as a result of some support from TMIT on the automated infection surveillance systems that are out there. And we're finding on the early blush of the results quite a variability. And so there's a couple of sets of issues in there. One is, how do you get uniformity or standardization of the actual technology so that that doesn't get too complicated? And then the second part of that is, how do you get some uniformity of approaches to the implementation of technologies? You know, we all know about the medical tubes, NG tubes, IV tubes, and the,
mm-hmm.
what a...
Oh, yeah, wrong.
You know, the
yeah.
wrong tube business
right,
is just
right,
a horrible
right.
thing and almost uncorrectable at this stage. So technology represents an opportunity to do it right, if you will. And so I think your challenge to us is appropriate.
Well,
looking how to place it within our different programs, I think, is important. Sorry,
well,
I cut you off.
Oh, no, I cut you off. I'm sorry. I mean, the one thing that comes to mind is the body of evidence that demonstrates that alerts, regardless of at what provider, nurse, physician, it's probably pharmacist, what alerts, whether it's a smart infusion device, an allergy alert, you can fill in the blank. The data pretty much in studies shows that humans override alerts because it interferes with workflow. So, So there you talk about a serious preventable adverse event of overriding an allergy alert as an example, or other alerts, infusion rates. So I'm just raising it. I don't know where it belongs, but I think it's, to me, what I see as the next wave of safety issues that we're all going to be, if we haven't been confronted with, we will be in at least on the health system side.
I think the question is around, when is a safety intervention appropriate to use, and when is it overused? The whole thing with alerts, if it's used just very sporadically, it can be effective.
Mm-hmm.
But when you use it to throw in to address every issue, then that's when people begin to override. So same thing with barcoding.
Oh, yeah, you can fill in any technology.
Exactly.
It's the same response.
Right.
But I guess unintended human factors and unintended consequences of tools designed to improve safety. That
right.
would be my...
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's, you know, how do we, NQF, kind of look at bringing human factors and systems reengineering into play as part of our safety portfolio, I think is going to be a challenge, because that's still such a brand new area for healthcare overall, but clearly important.
This is Anthony. I think that goes back to some of the other discussions that we've had, where, you know, how are we connecting with the actual workforce that's implementing these things? And if there's too many, do they just start disregarding because they get overwhelmed, or do we shift their focus in the wrong direction because it's too much?
Yes,
exactly. What do they need to prioritize to really pay attention to that will have the best outcome instead of trying to have all these things going on at the same time that they can't manage?
I think it follows with the question of what new types of programs someone or maybe a few people had said, be first. Where are we where is it possible for NQF to identify where new innovations or new knowledge are either not getting out, disseminated appropriately, where are the hazards, it's so that we can take some action related to that. That addresses the conversation we're having now around the technology. No one's addressing what all these vulnerabilities are and what were expected to be fixes for the system, but in fact increase the safety vulnerability.
Actually, the body of literature that's coming out, whether it's from the Journal of the American Medical Informatics Association or even in some of the contemporary scientific journals, continues to make this compelling and as an area to start to determine how to prioritize. Where does that fall into the NPP? You know, in terms of safe technology implementation.
Right.
Peter, an area that I've been concerned about is the outpatient area, and it might be a little bit of too controversial to touch, but
For example, adverse outcomes, death, whatever if you wish to look at, in conjunction with, for example, the period of time while waiting insurance authorization in a situation where pre-authorization was requested but denied, those sorts of insurance-related outpatient circumstances.
And, John, let me push on you a little bit. We've got, as part of our other work, you know, trying to expand into other environments beyond the hospital setting. And within the SRE steering committee, we've actually decided to begin looking at a little within the ambulatory physician practices and all that type of environment. But other than those two or three things you just nailed off, from an NQF programmatic vantage, how would you think it would be best addressed? Through measures, through practices, through SREs, or something entirely different?
The easier ones, of course, are to track are those sorts of serious events where there is a hospitalization, which then would enter into the Medicare record so that you could track them that way. But it becomes more complicated if you're looking at things like lipid therapy, weight reduction, things like that. Those become much more complex and depend on the socioeconomic demographics of the location as well. So it becomes very, very difficult when you're trying to track outpatient variables, trying to normalize it for the particular locale.
Right. Yeah, no, that's why I asked the question, because in my mind it's hugely challenging, in not only in terms of trying to design, but also trying to get participation and get some output.
I think it's a real challenge, but given the increasing interest in preventative care and in terms of, as I say, a hot issue, the insurance, it would be at least worthwhile looking at that to see if somebody can come up with a clever idea there.
Okay.
Peter, this is Dan.
Yeah.
I really commend what NQF is doing in terms of this committee, in terms of getting some consumer representatives. And it seems to me that we can't do enough in terms of emphasizing the partnership that's got to exist between patients, families, and clinicians. And some of that is through the various programs. Does it have merit to just have a single area focused on how we do this, how we promote it? You know, it starts in the doctor's office. It goes to the bedside. It's a macro, micro thing, committee work. RCA involvement, you know, is a hot button of mine, and just a whole lot of others.
Right.
So
right.
Food for thought.
Okay. No, good comment, Dan. Thank you. Other comments on this?
It would be very worthwhile to grapple with this idea of serious reportable event measurement of events that happen in outpatient settings, and I would agree that one potential window to that are hospital admissions for adverse drug events. We know those count for about 5% of all hospital admissions. There is a way to measure that, and some of those patients go on to die. I think it's possible to work up a measure that includes death from medication events that occur in outpatient settings, just as one example of something that could be done, but I haven't yet seen it done.
Well, ISMP and ASHP have just recently gotten together to do more in the way of medication reporting, and I believe a good part of that's in the ambulatory setting. But I haven't looked at that program critically as yet. And John, based on what you say, you know, we will be putting together a technical advisory panel in the near future on this expansion of SREs into other environments, and one specifically on that ambulatory environment. So we may... we'll certainly make sure you're aware when that's convening if you want to get engaged.
Sure. Sounds like my bailiwick.
Yeah. Give us a hand and we'll take an arm.
Well, since Helen's not doing that anymore, somebody has to.
I'm sort of doing it indirectly.
Yeah.
That's right.
All righty. Other comments on this? I know we're wearing you out. We've been at it for an hour, a little bit. But the conversation for me has been very valuable. We've learned a lot, and while we heard some of these comments at the face-to-face meeting, it's good to keep getting them out on the table, and I appreciate you doing that.
This is Phil Mailer again. Another area, just to expand on the previous comment, into the outpatient arena, as you know, we certainly as a healthcare industry put a lot of attention on the inpatient, but many-fold more visits take place on the outpatient than the inpatient arena. And one of the issues that is being talked about nationally is this whole transition from inpatient to outpatient, especially with the burgeoning number of hospitalists that there are, where handoffs and fragmentation of care is more likely to occur. And one area that seems to be having a bit of an uptick is the lack of follow-up for abnormal tests that are done as an inpatient, where a hospitalist is taking care of them, they're ready for discharge, there's pressure by the UM committee to get them discharged, and there's some tests pending, and they don't make it to the outpatient arena. And is there a way to be able to come up with a measure that looks at sort of serious test results that perhaps don't reach critical, where there has to be a callback, but yet a nodule on a chest x-ray that needs follow-up in 6 months that nobody sort of sees because it's done on the way out and nobody sort of looks at it on the from the outpatient team because they're no longer involved because there's a hospitalist taking care of them, or you know, some blood test that's done as part of a workup for X, Y, or Z, the disease gets better, but this test result is still out there and is markedly abnormal and really should be a tip-off that they need to pursue something new as an outpatient, but yet that's lost in the transition between inpatient and outpatient. I wonder if there's any thought about trying to bridge that gap as that handoff becomes a little less smooth than it was years ago when it was the same provider taking care of the patient through the continuum of care.
It's an excellent topic area, Phil, and I think it's one and several others related to it that need further addressing.
Yeah, and this has been a topic area, Phil, that people have been working on for a long time. It's pretty hard to actually operationalize those measures for lots of reasons, but I know there have been some interesting work recently looking at, for example, follow-up of laboratory results left pending at the time of discharge. So if you have specific thoughts or ideas about who might have those measures, they'd be the exact kind of things we'd like submitted to the safety measures project that Peter mentioned.
Yep, we've got a call for measures that's out there, and there are groups that have those type of things, Phil. By all means, please let us know.
Okay, we're doing some work on it here at Denver Health, and so maybe I'll follow up and shoot you an email on that.
That'd be great. Be happy to work with you on it further. All righty. Well, we're going to wrap up the last couple of minutes with some brief reports on some of the other projects, and I've asked some of our staff to provide that so you're not hearing me be the one talking with you all of the time. And I want to thank you, though, again, for each of the comments that have been made so far. This has been a very productive hour and a half, and it will continue to provide us with information to work on and information to keep working with you guys on as we continue with the focus for the PSAC overall. We've got common formats that we wanted a brief update, as well as the framework, the patient safety measures, the safe practices, the serious reportable events, and state-based reporting. Each of them at some level have been mentioned during the discourse today. But Eric, you were going to talk a bit about the common formats?
I think Melinda is actually on the line.
I don't have the listing here.
Yeah,
sorry, Melinda, please.
I can prompt.
Please go ahead.
Okay, given the hour, I'm going to assume also that the group knows the background of the common formats and would simply say that we have just completed at NQF collection of comments on version 1.0 of the common formats. That's actually the second version. It follows the beta version that we collected comments on last year. The initial beta version, we got 700 comments on. In this version 1.0, we got 188 comments across all of the reporting forms. That's three generic forms and eight event-specific forms. The subgroups within the expert panel that's been convened to consider and make recommendations on the comments has completed their review of those comments. And on February 8th, the full expert panel will consider and make recommendations on the set of comments and provide those to ARC for its consideration. It's already provided input on one set. as a result of the work that NQF has done, the and coordination by ARC with its federal partners, it will have completed in late February, early March, a version 1.0 of the common formats. These are hospital-focused formats. Those will include technical specifications that will enable vendors to put together electronic versions of the formats, and that, in fact, is expected to be the first set of the common formats that actually goes into use across the PSOs. And as of today, there are 78 listed PSOs. I'll stop there. Your questions.
Thanks, Melinda. That's good. Any quick questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Lindsay, you were going to provide us with a quick update on the framework on reporting?
Yeah. The patient safety reporting framework steering committee just had their in-person meeting on January 12th and 13th. And prior to that, they had had two conference calls where they've been outlining guidelines, purpose, and principles for a reporting framework. Part of the primary goal is to take notice of particular nuances that are unique to patient safety, such as events that happen rarely but have a great impact on the patient. So they came up with a pretty solid set of guidelines, and they took into account a lot of the factors that need to be further detailed when referring to patient safety events. They are in the process of coming up with a draft report, which will be circulated to that committee in the next couple of weeks, and that draft report will be made available for public and member comment on March 15th.
Thanks, Lindsay. And this is a very important framework report that we're developing, because we're aiming to set the bar fairly high on what the components within the public reporting moving forward should become, and that will hopefully help to unify as well the state-based activities, the healthcare system ones, as well as the federal, and any of the providers or payers out there that want to utilize reporting strategies. So we will make sure this committee gets opportunity to look at that draft report as well, because we value the expertise on this committee. Andrew, you're going to give us a couple of quick updates on our measures and our safe practices programs?
Sure, sure. So just to refresh everyone's memory, we've initiated a project to endorse some new patient safety measures and also to do a bit of maintenance on existing patient safety measures. The aim is to sort of bulk up our portfolio of safety measures a bit and to fill in some gaps where those exist. We issued a call for measures and a call for steering committee nominations. Both of those were released on January 4th. And we'll be closing on February 2nd. So we're still very much looking for nominations for that steering committee and for measure submissions. If anybody knows of anything that would be, of potential for that project, we would be very glad to hear it. I think that's about it.
Okay. And safe practices?
And then the safe practices. We're sort of in the midst of rethinking our strategy around the safe practices, we're just wrapping up the most recent update for 2010. That publication should be coming out within the next couple of months, and then we are moving into a phase where we'll be doing some more sort of basic maintenance around the practices, and then gearing up for a more comprehensive update within the next couple of years or so, maybe starting in late 2010. Anything else you would want to add on that, Peter?
No, I think you covered both of them quite well. Thank you, Andrew. And on that latter point, I'd made mention of it earlier in the call about trying to weave the SREs, practices, and measures together closer, and some of what Andrew just described is developing that plan and strategy and outlining it. And again, as we tease that up, we'll utilize this committee to get a little bit of feedback on that, especially after a lot of the good ideas that float around today. Eric, did you want to give a brief update on the state-based reporting, and then I'll close off with some final comments and go from there.
Sure. The state-based reporting, we've touched on it briefly during this call, but again, one of the core goals of it was to inform our patient safety reporting framework, and then as well to understand the use of our measures in the field and specifically the serious reportable events and kind of inform our work going forward. So working chronologically here, we recently had a call with the folks, with different state agencies and federal agents, state groups and federal groups who are working on this, with HHS, CDC, NASHPE, the National Academy for State Health Policy, and ARC, and as well WESTAT, which is a funder under ARC, and we're working on convening the groups, and it looks like there will be funding to bring this group again together again in the first quarter of this year. Next, however, we'll be rolling out the reports from our initial meeting in late October and getting those up for public dissemination. Following the meeting with the folks from the different agencies, we're going to be convening a smaller group as far as a planning committee to get the ball rolling with the logistics here, and then bringing in a small group of states to get their input about how the conference calls and then how the first how the next meeting of this group will go. And then I think lastly, the only thing I wanted to say was just about kind of outcomes of this state group, as it's certainly an effort by us to convene and to harmonize some of the state and federal efforts that are going on. But a few other kind of more tangible things. I look to facilitating a base of standardization as far as how we report and learn from patient safety errors. We've already seen in Florida and some other states are moving more toward the serious reportable events. Some states already use them as their basis for reporting, but more and more states are looking to them. As well, a role in terms of public guidance. NQF staff and myself in particular are fielding a number of questions as a result of the state-based meeting and informing the different state groups about our work and then as well about error reporting in the field. And then as well, we have reports emanating from this first meeting and then as well from the future meetings to inform the field and to let folks know about how some of this state and federal work can be harmonized. And all along, some of the folks that we've brought in, some of these new strategic partnerships, can inform our work and inform the framework, obviously, but as well some of the folks from the state-based group have been worked into our different committees. First, among those, the serious reportable events, where John Morley from New York and Diane Rydrick from Minnesota are both involved and on the steering committee. So a lot of different outcomes from this, but as well a lot more exciting work going forward.
Thanks, Eric. And so for the PSAC, what we'll continue to do is get your inputs on our programs as we have been and continue to refine, but we'll also, in addition to these verbal report outs that we've been doing on the call so far, now that we've got some draft documents coming into place coming from some of these other committees, we'll begin to circulate those around for some of your comments. As well, just to make sure that you're staying up to speed with things as best as we can. The one program that was not mentioned so far on that list of bullets is the serious reportable events, and that's I basically made my comments during the course of our earlier discussion about the revisions to the definitions. We will have a call for new serious reportable events as well as review of the existing reportable events in the near future and some TAPs, so please keep an eye out on our website for those things. But by all means, for the time being, please look at that revised definition and offer comments. So we've pretty much expended all of our time, but I wanted to see if there were any other comments or suggestions or questions from members on the call here today still. A lot of information over our hour and a half, but I appreciate your inputs. If you have some other thoughts or ideas, please don't hesitate to contact me by email. We can always do a phone call as well, and we will plan for another follow-up call in the near future with, again, a focused agenda and try to design this so we're gaining your valuable input and not just reporting out to you. So with that, I'd like to close this call, but thank each of you for good discussion. I learned a lot, value your input, and I hope to keep you engaged as we move forward. So thank you very much.
It was very constructive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. All right. Bye. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.